I'd call the meeting back to order. At this time, we have Mark Hanley here with us from Anadarko, and I'd like to turn the microphone over to Mr. Hanley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Have our undivided attention.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Mark Hanley. I'm the Public Affairs Manager for Anadarko Petroleum. Appreciate the opportunity to talk to you today about the PPT and the governor's proposed new bill. What I'll do is give you just a brief, it'll be quite brief, about Anadarko in Alaska, just so you understand kind of who we are. I'm going to tell you what our view is on the PPT and just in a real short statement. Then I'll go through a little bit of economics to show you the impacts of different decisions you might make, whether it's going to 25% on the tax rate, for example, how that might impact how we view the expiration economics. And then at the end, I go through a number of issues that I think have arisen as I've watched testimony on things like the $73 million, the look back, pricing forecasts, all those kinds of things. So I'll get to those kind of questions, try and answer some of them at the back end. Just a quick overview of Anadarko. As you can see on the map, we're a large independent. Independent meaning we're not integrated. We do not have downstream facilities, no refineries. And the reason most people don't know the names of independents is we also do not have gas stations. And that's where the general public equates to companies largely. But we are quite a large company as independents go, a market capitalization of about $23 billion. We have over 3,000 employees worldwide. We're on the S&P 500 as one of the companies listed on that exchange. And as you can see, we have expiration and production in many places around the world. As you look at Anadarko in Alaska, kind of came up here first in the early 90s. We actually partnered with Exxon in a well called Thetis Island offshore the North Slope. We've partnered with an awful lot of companies from BP to Encana to ConocoPhillips, Arco, to a lot of the people that are up here we've been in partnership with and have some current partnerships with as well. As you look at this chart, everything that is pink or yellow is acreage that Anadarko has an interest in. It varies our ownership interest by region. The pink or the mauve color there is largely where ConocoPhillips is the operator. We're a 22% owner at the Alpine Field, which is right here. And then most of this acreage right in here, we're 22% an owner, and then it shifts. We get a little bit higher percentage as we come out here. And in some of that acreage, Pioneer is also a partner. So the NPRA acres, as you go west, ConocoPhillips operated, we have anywhere from a 22 to a 40% interest. And we're partners with ConocoPhillips and in some cases with Pioneer. The yellow acreage is Anadarko-operated acreage. Where we are the operator, and in some of the places like here we have 100% of the acreage. In other places like the foothills, we have a partnership with Petro-Canada, and we just announced a new company coming to Alaska, which is BG, and they are a very large worldwide gas company, much larger than Anadarko on a market cap basis even. So we're excited about having them as a partner as well as them coming to Alaska. But anyway, you can see we have quite an extensive acreage position, about 2.2 million net acres right now to Anadarko. It's probably, we're neck and neck with ConocoPhillips on the most net acres on the slope, but ours are, I would say, a little broader than, I shouldn't say that. We just have an extensive portfolio. We like Alaska because of its opportunities, and as you can see, we think there are a lot of different plays. We're not just looking for one or one area. We've done a regional model to try and understand how the whole system up here works, and we have lots of leads and plays in different areas, some of which are oil, some of which are gas, but that gives you a pretty good idea of kind of where we fit on the North Slope. Just to give you a rough idea of what we think about Alaska, we think it's a world-class petroleum basin. We think it has significant remaining resource. It is probably not in the, we don't think there's a Prudhoe Bay to be found out there, but there are a lot. We think there are a number of alpine-sized fields, 400 million barrels, and an awful lot of, 50 to 150 million barrel fields out there. So that we think there's a lot of resource, but it's not huge, and some of it is far from infrastructure and interesting areas. As you see, we think there's anchor-type fields, an anchor field being something that would support its own facilities. So you wouldn't have to come back into an existing facility to tie in. You can support the cost to develop, produce your own oil and treat it. And that's generally where Anadarko is looking. We tend to look for the larger fields, an anchor field. They tend to be further from infrastructure, and they tend to be higher risk, but also higher reward. We see Alaska as a favorable political environment. We do business around the world, and I would say that, you know, despite the fact that we're going through a tax change that has, you know, some implications for us, generally speaking, this is a very favorable political environment. We've had very good reception on a lot of issues for exploration interests, for trying to increase the tundra travel seasons, to trying to get regulations reduced to improve our ability to go out and do our work. So generally speaking, we see this as a favorable political environment. As I talked about earlier, we see the abundant new entrants as partnering opportunities here in Alaska, and we see that as a good thing. One of the issues for Alaska is if you want to get this area developed, it's really underexplored by a whole bunch, and you need to drill more wells. And there's a lot of area out there. The more people that are drilling wells, the better we all do. We don't view it as a competition. We have competition, obviously, against some of these other companies. But to the extent that somebody else goes and drills a well and either confirms or condemns something, it can help us as well. And I think that's a benefit, at least how we look at it. And just to give you an example, Total, if you remember, went out and drilled an NPRA on acreage that they bid on. ARCO and Anadarko were partners. We didn't even bid on that acreage, even though we bid on acreage around there. We didn't think it was that prospective. The fact that they went out and drilled, I think it probably in this case proved our concept that it wasn't as commercial as they thought, because they're not doing anything with it. On the other hand, if they'd have found something, we would have had to all change our models, and we're not always right. And Alpine's a great example, because until Alpine came along, nobody was looking west. So again, I would just say the new partnering opportunities and the new companies coming up here, everybody has a little different idea, and sometimes they're right and sometimes we are, but I think that benefits the state particularly, but we think it also benefits us as a company.
Mark, question.
Yeah.
When did Total build, go out and do their exploration work?
I'm not exactly. It was like 3 years ago they drilled the well, I think.
It was fairly current. I think that work fell under SB 185, didn't it?
Yes, I believe it did.
Okay.
It did. So it's in the last few years, but I can't tell you exact season. We can find that out if you need it. So we see a lot of opportunity here, which is why we're here, which is why we've developed such a large acreage position. But we also see it has challenges. It's a maturing basin. It has high costs relative to other places, lack of infrastructure and competition, and that's a lack of competition in some respects for facilities as well as other people out there drilling wells. Long lead time exploration, I will tell you, that's one of the things that creates a challenge for Alaska compared to other places. It's from first thought to first production, it's probably longer in Alaska than anywhere else we do business around the world. And that is largely because of the winter season only drilling. If we go to the Gulf of Mexico, we go to other places, we can drill 3 wells in 1 year, and that would take us 3 years in Alaska, and you can just see it adds on to the time frame. So some of that has been helped by the tundra travel season issues, and we're trying to address it otherwise, but some of it is just going to be, if you're farther from the market, it's going to cost you more. If you have these restrictions, it's going to impact that, but it's just a fact that it does take a long lead time, and that a little bit has an impact on what this bill does by getting you. You can look at it two different ways. When you get some money, either you can count it as recovering some of your money faster through these credits, which helps your net present value, or you can talk about reducing your cost. But we'll talk about that in a minute. And then, of course, the last one is the lack of a gas market. We're very supportive of getting a gas line built. We think it will improve both gas exploration and oil exploration. When you drill for oil, a lot of times you find gas. So, you know, having a market for that instead of being just a cost right now, you could monetize some of that gas that you might find, and that will improve the economics for looking for oil as well. So we're very supportive of getting a gas line built. How about the PPT? We feel like the administration did a good job balancing the issues and priorities of both the state, the companies, as you can see. I think if you look at it from a state perspective, as we see it anyway, under this system, the state will pick up more money. If this, you know, I've heard varying numbers. Generally, at these high oil prices, $1 billion a year more. It's a higher government take for the state. They're getting more revenue. That's a good thing for the state. The companies, now this is from our perspective, I'll tell you, versus the state, what did we get? We're going to pay more. We are going to pay a little bit more. Anadarko will under the system. But we feel like in most of the scenarios, our expiration economics have improved because of the way this is structured. So that means we will, everything else being equal, we might be able to drill more wells. So that's a positive thing for us. That could create more revenue for the state as well. So that balanced with the fact that at low oil prices, the state is actually going to pick up some of the risk. It will, as you've seen in some of the presentations before, at lower oil prices, the companies will pay less than they do under the current system. So balancing off the fact that we are paying more with the fact that exploration economics have improved and we have some downside risk protection, we've given up the upside essentially is what it's done, we think this is a good balance. And then I get to the companies versus companies. Sometimes people don't focus on that so much. I would just say, I've described it yesterday as a tenuous truce between the companies. We all have different, you heard from the big companies, you heard from Chevron, you heard from other folks as well. I would just say, we're not a monolith. In general, we're all supportive of lower taxes, and to the extent you can lower the tax rate, we would be very supportive of that. We think that would be appropriate and improve our exploration economics as well. But there are differences, and I will get to them, between the companies. You know, I've heard the big companies say, hey, it seems this system seems tilted towards the small guys. You know, why are you guys focused on that? And don't forget about us, which seems a little strange to me because it seems like the field is quite tilted already towards the big guys. But anyway, on our part, I will just tell you, the smaller players, some of us, a little overactive imagination as we go into this situation sometimes because we've seen this bill for a week, just like you have. We're a little concerned that it was negotiated by companies who are looking out for their interests. Sometimes they're aligned with ours, but many times they're not. So as we get more comfortable with the bill, I think we become more comfortable. But we also, when it first drops in, we go, uh-oh, what happened to us? So I would just say there is a company versus company tension in here. I'll talk a little bit about it, particularly related to the $73 million allocation or allowance that's in the bill, and I'll discuss that in a minute. Next, I would like to go to a couple of slides, and I hope to use these just to illustrate some points. And one of the things I want to point out is these are our assumptions for this. We've modeled a small field and a medium to large anchor size field to see what the impacts are. It's very much like Pedro's Van Muir's, you know, presentations and how it would impact it. It's not a specific field. It's kind of a generic field, but it's representative of some of the things in Alaska, so you can at least get an idea. We are still modifying this model because we're still understanding exactly how the new bill works. And the other thing I would say is, despite the fact that we're fairly close to Pedro, who had chart 11.6, on what we think size and things where we came out with a bit of different numbers. And one of my points to folks is we need to get on the same page, not on a policy basis, but just on the basic understanding of how we're putting these models together and the assumptions. We need accurate and consistent assumptions so that we can actually measure the impacts. And then you guys can make the policy calls of that. But right now I feel like we have different ideas between companies on what the impact is on the same size field. It's dangerous because we're going to have unintended consequences if we're not careful. Here's the chart. Really what I wanted to explain, if you look, the existing ELF, and it's very close to the other line here, but the existing ELF system goes here, is how we've modeled it on this type of field. We have a 2020 for an proposal as the bill exists for an existing producer. We have a 2020 proposal for a new entrant, and then we have a 25% tax rate 20 for a existing producer. And the difference between existing producer is the assumption is when you get that $73 million allowance, we already have, for instance, Anadarko would be an existing producer. We already have income at Alpine against which we'd use the $73 million. So in evaluating, for this purpose, in evaluating this prospect, we wouldn't have that $73 million to utilize to help our economics on this prospect. So I just want it, but it helps demonstrate the value of the $73 million. So really what you see from our perspective on this small 47 million barrel field, kind of a satellite opportunity, the existing system's here. You have a slight increase in the after-tax rate of return for an existing player under this system. You have a much more significant increase because they get to utilize that $73 million as they calculate the value of their return, because they're not going to pay as much tax on the revenue when they get it in the back end. And then the 25-20, as you can see, it's essentially laid along the same line. So that what this says is for an existing player to, on a small field, if you increase the rate from 20% to 25 in this scenario, the economics are not improved over the current system. So if your goal is to increase the economics and increase the drilling, in this particular case, and I want to emphasize this is one scenario, one small field, but it's just illustrative of the things that you should watch out for as you're going forward and try and model these. I've got another, this is the same assumptions on a net present value basis. And it basically what it shows is if you look at the existing system right here, as prices get higher, the state's taking the high end of the price, so on a net present, the high end, a higher percentage, so that on a net present value basis, this system looks worse at high prices than the current system for an existing player at 20 and 25%. And you can see the trend lines are roughly the same as they were on the other one. It's just shifted up. Companies use multiple ways to evaluate their prospects, both rate of return and net present value. Under this one, you'd say the net present value looks a little worse than the rate of return if you're looking at 2020. I've got one other prospect. This is a larger one. It's more like an anchor field type prospect. Got the assumptions here, but really they're... And if you look at the same type of calculation under the current system, you've got this line, and then you have your two lines. This is the next one up would be the 25-20. The next one up would be the existing player with the 20-20, and the top one again is a new entrant with a $73 million allowance that's allowed. And you can see the green line and the red line, the difference between somebody that has a $73 million is a lot closer, and that's because it's a lot larger field and it has less of an impact. The $73 million, you're going to have a lot more income coming off that field, so the $73 million has less value relatively to a smaller field with less income. The $73 million is a higher percentage, so those lines are closer together. So you can see there's an improvement, whereas on the small field, you saw no improvement in this case. When you raise the rate to 25%, you do see a small improvement in the tax rate. So on a larger field spread over a lot larger income, you can still see an economic improvement. And then on a net present value basis, it's kind of hard to see, but you see both of them at high prices, even everybody comes down to essentially no better than the current system. But again, you can see where the crossover point where you're picking up some of the low side and you do better than the current system. In here, let me just talk about a couple of issues. Again, the main point to take away from those charts is we do see some increased economic opportunity for exploration and development projects under the current bill. As you raise that tax rate, if that's all you do, it just makes sense. It's going to decrease your economics, and it has. And in small field case, it can put it underneath the current system, and even in a large field case, it comes down to where it's less valuable. And on a net present value basis, it's, if you're looking at it that way, it's even not quite as good as that. The look back was as I talked about it in the House, one of the representatives was quite direct in his comments, so I thought I'd get this one out of the way first if people are going to drug me, and then we can go on to the other ones. The Anadarko, as an alpine owner, would have a significant value to the look-back. And to the extent that people, it seemed like part of the argument on the look-back was, look, you made investment decisions at low prices, you know, and prices have been high, and you've been able to capture some of that value because the prices are high and maybe recover your capital. And I'll just give you an example. For us, if that's part of the argument, we're a partner at Alpine. We're developing two satellites. We made a decision to sanction those satellites in December of 2004. It was in a high-price oil environment. That's only a year and something ago. I mean, we're in these same relative high prices. It was a high-price environment. And we spent a lot of money in the last year and a half. That production's going to come on later this year and next year. So to the extent that we made an investment decision at high prices, we have not had a chance through production to recover any of the value of that, and the high side is getting taken away from us. No question about it. So I'll just leave it at that, but I think there is some rationale with decisions that were made under certain circumstances, and they were all at low prices where we're able to recover stuff because we haven't had any production even yet.
Senator Elton.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Is this the way you prefer doing it, or do you want to wait?
Mark, you want to wait for questions?
Or? We're on the question and answers. I'll be happy to take each one. Yeah, that's it.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Mark, I mean, from what you just said, I could make the argument then that the look back goes too far back, that maybe the look back should only go back to that time where we have been in the more high price regime.
Well, you could, and that would be better than getting rid of it altogether. I mean, we're going to look at it. I mean, I think I can make the case that people made investment decisions. I mean, part of the problem is if you look back far enough, and I'll go through this with the price. I'll show you a price slide. I mean, here's the Department of Revenue's. We just charted theirs through 2004. And like you said, I mean, a lot of times we were in the low price environment. But the other way to look at some of this is, the state's been taking, if you listen to Dr. Van Meer's, it's a regressive system, and the state's been getting a high percentage at low oil prices, and it should be the other way around. And you could argue that all these investments down here, the state was getting a higher than reasonable percentage, and that, you know, I mean, that's a policy call. People say, well, you shouldn't have made the investments. But I understand your point. I would just say that there are some differences if that's the value that people have not recovered at all on some of these things, and investment decisions were not necessarily made under low oil price scenarios. We have to balance our prices out and not deal with peaks and valleys.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Which we got right to the price forecast. Some people have talked about the fact that I've heard comments that, you know, price swings affect your economics more than anything we can do with the tax scenario, so it really doesn't matter whether we go to 25%, 30%, you know, a $10 swing price. And to some extent that's true, but that's a variable that we can't control. I would just say you need to set the tax policy so we can invest, because you do have to compete against other places around the world. So I wouldn't take that view that doesn't matter what the tax is. I tried to show you some economics. That's how we'll view it. We'll pick a price forecast that we will use to evaluate our economics. And people have asked me, what is that? And of course, companies don't share what those are. But I did show the wellhead prices across the bottom so you can see the impact. And you can get consultants that will tell you the range in which companies will model that, even though we won't tell you our internal numbers. We'll tell you what the price range is. You can see what the impact. So I just, to the extent that you're interested, we're more than willing to put our charts out with prices on them. You know, it's interesting. People have talked about the high cash environment. Just this is more on a spending side issue. When the crash happened, actually when the bump up happened up here in prices in the early 80s, a lot of companies spent a lot of money. and went out and drilled the heck out of things. Some things that probably were, they kind of said, hey, we got some free cash, let's do things that might not have even fit our portfolio, but let's go take the higher risk stuff. When the crash came, it had a huge impact, and I'll just tell you, what you see from companies doing these days is they're taking their cash flow, and yes, you will see increased capital budgets for expiration, but they're not huge like the price increase. People are buying back stock and paying down debt to keep their balance sheet available for the next downturn so that we can keep a level of spending on all types, and we don't have that downturn where we have to cut away things. It's just we're a bit like the state in that you have to, but we're trying to manage our risk so that we can handle the downturns when the price of oil goes back down. Talk about independents are sensitive. Some of us are very large companies, but not on the scale of an Exxon for sure. And our portfolios, while we do business in many places, are not as large. And to the extent that we get leases, we tend to want to confirm and condemn. We don't want to hold on to them. We want to figure something out and move forward. Either find something and develop it or go on. We don't have the ability to rotate things as much in a worldwide portfolio, so we are more sensitive to things that you do. In some respects, you might say we can also act quicker. Based on what you do. What you do in this bill will incent behavior, and it'll have a quicker impact on the independents than it will on the larger companies who take not necessarily a longer-term view, but a larger portfolio view. The $73 million has been an issue. I will just say that the $73 million is very important for Anadarko. As a component of this, I think the governor correctly identified a way to try and help smaller producers or people that have not got any production in the state. You can see how it improves some of the exploration economics from one of the ones before. To the extent we've heard other companies suggest it creates an unlevel playing field, I guess I would argue the other side. First of all, everybody gets $73 million. I mean, I get it, Exxon gets it, BP gets it, ConocoPhillips gets it, Talisman gets it. Anybody who is a company will get the same $73 million, and it's worth 20% times $73 million, which is about $15 million is the value to you. But one thing I would point out, a company like Anadarko, when we get the $73 million, we'll be able to use it immediately against an Alpine production, so it will help us in that tax increase that we currently have from current production. The explorers that don't have production, it helps their economics as they look on whether they're going to drill, because they figure that into their long-term economics. But it might take a company, they're going to drill 3, 4, 5 years before they find something. It hasn't cost the state a dime because it's not a carry forward. It's not being utilized. They only get to use it when they have production. So to the extent that there's not a level playing field, those of us that get it right away, I actually might have an advantage because we're getting the $15 million value from day one, and they are not. So I would not argue that it is an unlevel playing field, and I'll talk just a little bit about the value of it. It really has to do with what level of income you have. Obviously, if you have a large amount of income, $73 million allowance is not that big a deal to you. It's a small percentage. If you have a small income, it's a much bigger deal to you. And just to give you an example, and this is in rough numbers, a lot can be changed, but it's in the ballpark. For a company that had 250,000 barrels a day, if you got rid of the $73 million allocation or allowance, if you wanted to hold them harmless by reducing the tax rate to have the equivalent impact, you'd reduce their tax rate by 0.5%. But if you had a company that had $20,000 barrels a day, who eliminated that $73 million, to keep them whole, essentially, you'd have to lower it to 15%. So it starts giving you an idea of what the value is. And to the extent that we are, and this is where I guess you would call it a tenuous truce, if there are trade-offs to be had, the larger companies will give up the $73 million for a 1% decrease in a tax rate. but that will have a very, and that will be a benefit to them. They will come out net ahead, whereas companies like ours will come out net behind. So I just, you know, you guys get to make the policy calls, but it does have a much larger impact, which is why I think you've heard most of the smaller producers and smaller companies say it's a very important feature of the governor's bill. The credits that aren't. Anadarko participates in an informal group of independents, and I guess I'm going to speak as Anadarko, but this doesn't really affect us. The whole selling of the credits, the ability to transfer those credits, is a good concept, and I think it was raised here yesterday by some other people. But if the state's willing to grant a credit, and you're willing to give a dollar's worth of value that somebody can get against the state, the fact that Anadarko, who has income, can get a dollar for it, and Company Y, who is new here, can only get 90 cents, 80 cents, 95 cents on a dollar, yet the company who buys it gets the buck, the state still loses the same buck, does not seem fair. In fact, to the extent we're trying to encourage new companies, it's created an unlevel playing field. I mean, they have to, and particularly the way this is set up in a low price environment, there's a cap on the amount of credits that can be out there. A company can use credits to take their tax down to zero, but they cannot use somebody else's credits in very low price environments. So you have to discount the value of those. And to the extent that the state is impacted the same, I think the idea of a refundable credit, the concept, is appropriate because it cuts out a middleman that doesn't cost the state any more money. So I would just suggest that is one idea, or potentially, to the extent that people want to do that, expand the allowance for the credits. Other credits within the state, you can use them to against corporate taxes. You can use them if you want to go bid at a lease sale, you can use them to bid at the lease sale. You can use them for rental payments. So at least under those scenarios, by expanding it, and there's precedent for it in the state, you could allow some of these companies to get 100% of the value of their credits and not have to discount them. So that's
the logical thing is lease sales, because that's what we're trying to do, is expand the activity.
Sure. I would just say, to the extent, and there was some discussion in the House about, well, maybe the state should have a standing offer at 95 cents on the dollar, and we could actually get some benefit out of it, too. You know, it might be better than the companies can get. And that's something you can consider. I would just say, if you're willing to grant a credit, grant the credit. Why should the existing players get to get it, and it costs you a dollar when they have it? Why are you looking to make money off the guys? You know, make the policy call on what you want to do for credits, and then let everybody get it the same. It affects the state treasury the same. To the extent that you can implement that, I think it would be beneficial to the newer players. Be careful what you ask for. As I said earlier, what you do with the bill will incent certain behavior. And the question is, what do you want? I can tell you what we would like. We would like to drill more wells. We have a portfolio of prospects, many of which are uneconomic. We are trying to find ways to make them more economic, increase our knowledge, decrease our costs, those kinds of things. To the extent that you can help increase our economics, that's what we would like. I think you guys need to figure out, do you want more exploration? Do you want more large fields that have higher risk but higher reward? Do you want more small fields that have less risk and less reward? Do you want heavy oil development? Do you want more production from infield drilling? That's a policy call for you folks to make, and one size doesn't always fit all, and that's part of the problem why you have this, why I said the governor created a nice balance within the system. It's not perfect for everybody. It seems to have helped some more than others a little bit. You've incurred some expiration, at least from our perspective, and you've picked up extra revenue, so I think it's a nice balance. But really, start back and say, what do you want? And I think you should try and find oil in whatever venue you think's appropriate to replace declining production. I would just say, people seem to focus on the cost as they view it of different options. If we go from 20% to 25% at current prices, the state will get another $350 million. If we, the look-back provisions cost, I can't remember, was $170 million a year for the 5 years following. That's how much they cost the state. The credits are worth this much money. What I think you also need to look at, there are consequences. If you raise the tax rate, how much oil on the back end are you losing because you don't have expiration and you're not only losing the property taxes but the royalties and severance? You will, if you keep, you know, as you increase your tax rate, things become less economic. You will increase the minimum economic field size. You will have to find larger fields to before they'll be economic. So get an understanding of the backside, the consequences, and that's your guys' policy call, but I would just say that's where the real value is. Do you want more upfront money or do you want more back end, and how do you balance those out? And then the last point here is about Let's Talk is, I think our suggestion is we need to get together with some of you to make sure our models, at least to the extent we can, are the same. I'm not talking about the policy calls here. I'm talking about Dr. Van Meers has got great charts in here, but I will tell you, under his small field case, he shows better numbers than we do. And I'm not saying he's wrong. We, for some reason, are crossing paths on how we interpret this. His trends on almost everything he does are very similar to ours. It's just a matter of level. And I'd like to have his numbers, because it actually makes things look even better for us. But my point being, some type of work session or something, we've had a little bit of this interaction. The administration's been good to talk to. But I'll tell you what's happening. Each company's going in asking questions. Each company is going in asking specifics about a model. And I've talked to three different companies who have three different ideas about what this bill does. And we're not, this isn't, I'm not even using it to try and leverage you. I mean, we just differ, so we're all trying to internally figure it out, and I guess our preference would be to try and get on as much as we can on a common baseline where we each understand the assumptions that are made and make them accurate to the extent we can, and then you can see what the impacts are of your decisions, and we can, you know, have input with you about the policy decisions. But I'm concerned that we're going to make policy decisions based on widely varying information, and the impacts will be unknown until sometime in the future. So, Mr. Chairman, with that, I would just say, again, I think, generally speaking, you get more revenue by increasing production than by increasing taxes, because in general, the more you charge for something, the less use there is. This is a bit of a unique circumstance for us anyway, because we will pay a little bit more, but we also think the expiration economics have improved, which is why we can come forward and support the bill as it is. As you decide to move forward with changes, you know, it's a balancing act. We can run the numbers eventually. Hopefully we'll have the same base models and tell you what we think the impacts will be, is so you can utilize that as you go forward in making your decisions. Thank you.
Stevens.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Hanley. I just couldn't help but make a comment on the fact that we're trying to look for all the same modeling, but I would be suspect to think that we could get the five largest producers to come in and reveal their internal modeling to the state or to one another in terms of how they're going to do their probability on success on it. So I agree with your concept, but I don't think that we could ever really get to an agreed point there. I have another question on a separate subject.
He wants to answer that.
I can see that, yeah.
Yeah, if I could, Mr. Chairman. Senator Stevens, Mr. Chairman, I would just say that you probably won't find all the details of our internal modeling either, and that's not what I'm suggesting. I think we could use, to the extent that Dr. Van Meers, or if the legislature's doing their own models, use a public model that we could actually look at, and I think we could give you ideas of how at least the base model would be, and there's certain assumptions that are in there, certain things we are not going to tell you, but we are so far apart right now on the baseline that I think it's problematic. And to the extent there isn't, we will continue to try and work with folks as an individual company, but as I'm finding, other companies interpret things a little bit differently, and we need to get on the same page, but.
Senator Stevens.
Thank you for that, Mr. Hanley. On another subject, you said that, and I it was intriguing, you said that the actions in this legislation will incent behavior. Can you do me a favor and rank in priority which ones you think of the essentially the four mechanisms in the bill, the rate, the credit, the floor, and the transition period, the impact in terms of sensitivity to your decisions as you, from your company, if you understand my question?
Senator Stevens, through the chair, yes, I understand the question. I will try and answer it because there's a difference between what the impact will be to our company versus the impact that will be to our exploration economics, too. But part of what's happening here is the way you're getting more money and improving exploration economics is you're kind of hammering the existing production. There's a big tax increase on that, and giving some of that to encourage other exploration. So there's kind of the us versus them, you know, and we're both because we have production that gets impacted.
Well, pardon me, I asked Anadarko the question.
Sure. But to the extent, well, the $73 million is quite important to us. As I said, it's worth a 5% tax rate increase to us or decrease. I mean, that's the relative value. As we look at that, but if you look at the, I'd have to model this stuff, but generally speaking, the tax rate is, I think if you went, I can't tell you how much, but let's say you went from a 20-20 to a 25-25, I think our economics would go down. So the tax is, at that level, is more valuable on a one-to-one, it's not a one-to-one basis. So the tax has more impact to us than the credits. You're going to have to give us more credits to make up the same tax rate increase. And as I said, on the $73 million for us, as we look at it right now, you'd have to have a 5% change in the tax rate to get rid of the $73 million on the downside, whereas for a big company, it would be much less. So they would be impacted differently. Generally, I think you're going to see the tax rate is generally across the board the driver.
Yeah, thank you.
Senator Stebbins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Hanley, can we go back a slide, please? If we take a look at that one just as an example, and you, it's all hypothetical, so we'll just assume that this 12% is your discount rate, which we all know is not. Let's just say it is. You've got ALF up there, the current existing system, and then you have the 25-20 line without the $73 million exemption. And
right.
Unfortunately, we can't get rid of the other two up there. But those two lines cross at about $32.
Correct.
And one of the things that we've talked about, well, it's a zero-sum game, so. For us to get it, it's got to come from you, and from you to get it, it's got to come from us. So, but in that chart, it's kind of a pivot point there, and I think some of the concepts we're struggling with on the policy side is the shallow up on the left-hand side,
mm-hmm.
your exposure to a negative or the industry, not just yours, but the entire industry's exposure, and on the right-hand side, here this chart stops somewhere a little north of 45, but you know. Somewhere where we have fairly high oil prices, defined by who wants to define what high is, that we have at least a flat, if not a, from our side of the table, a progressive system. So we share on the upside a little bit more, and thereby we take up some of the risk on the downside to try to keep things in balance. When we look at models like this, should we look at trying to make those lines more horizontal and with some form of a curvature north of some particular price range, or should we just
Senator Stevens through the chair? I agree with you. In fact, that's what it is showing, that under this system, the lower prices, you know, below the $32 wellhead value, at a 25-20, that the companies, this makes our prospects look better. So the state, under this showing, this is showing that the state is picking up more of the risk, but at the high end, the 25-20 looks worse than the existing system, because the state's, this is from our perspective here, so this is, the state is picking up more. It's exactly what you said. So you can, I mean, you can tilt that line, you can try and move it up or down. It's more of a policy call on your part, and how it, I don't really have an answer to you, to the extent that you can. Now, some companies, every company is different on what criteria they're going to use. Some, are they going to be more weighted on net present value, you know, more on cash flow, more on just rate of return? I guess I'm not answering your question. I don't know the answer. Should we change it? I don't know.
Well, I guess you get into the rate of return, you get into the timing of the cash flow issue, which the net present value gets away from. So that's why I picked this versus the rate of return example, because I think it's a fair representation. And the point I think that we need to consider as policymakers is that crossover point and how we want the slope of that line on the right-hand side of that crossover point, and how do we want it on the left-hand side, you know, to shallow up your risk exposure or decrease the industry's risk exposure. The current system is regressive by nature, and the proposed change in ELF is, the current policy is regressive, and the proposal is progressive, and when we added everything up together, we basically are flat. Now, we've had the subjects come up several times, and we'll have a, you know, our own consultant with his own models, and you'll have another, a whole set of different answers here coming in a couple of days, I'm sure. But there has been some discussion of trying to at least look at the potential of making it the entire system more progressive above some particular price point, yet to be determined. And you know, should we do it or should we not do it is just a policy call, and that is, you know, yet to be determined. But I think this model here is pretty tells a pretty good story, because you've got the $73 million in there, and you can see that just steps the line vertically up the chart.
Correct.
And the 25-20, for whatever reason, doesn't include that, but you've got the 2020 with and without it.
Go ahead. Senator Stedman, through the chair, we could put that on, and I would think you would see the 25-20 with the $73 million would be slightly higher than the 25-20 without it, just like it is on the other one. We try to keep the graph. It's hard enough to see this already, so you'd have the basic same model. Your point, if you make it more progressive, if you take the system and then go and just add at $50 a barrel, or pick your number out in the future, a higher tax rate above that, it again, probably depending on how people model it, it's getting more for the state. It's taking away the high side. It may be the appropriate policy, but it will have some impact to the extent that there's a model that shows a wide range of prices and people take that into account. It could have, you know, it could decrease your economics. I mean, generally, when you tax more, you're going to decrease your.
I think that point you just made right on. Generally speaking, when you increase taxes, you get a economic suppressant, and this animal we're dealing with is a little bit different, because, you know, we've got one entity that owns the resource, another entity that's harvesting the resource, exploring for and harvesting it, and we're trying to work together, you know, in a business arrangement that's beneficial to both parties.
Senator, I would just say that that's why I think, generally speaking, it's reached a nice balance so far that we can see. It's not that you can't. There's a whole bunch of ways to skin this thing. I mean, and, you know, what you do will have. But from our perspective, it seems like a decent balance. The state is picking up, pick your number, the one thrown around is $1 billion a year more. And, you know, at the current thing. And we think it's improved the economics, which should mean you get more oil, at least from our company's perspective. So that seems like a nice balance. Can you make it better? I don't know. Yeah, you could. I don't know. But that balancing between trying to get more from the state, as you try and get more from the state, no matter how you do it, it's as you said, it is. You can't take more from one side generally without giving something up.
Go ahead.
Just a clarification on a couple charts previous to that. You had another present value chart, and it uses small oil development, and we're trying to, you know, also take into account the small development versus the large and the medium. And the x-axis is the same scale, but the y-axis is quite a bit different. And I'm just curious on the modeling difference. You know, just looking at the title, the small development, I would think would have a smaller net present value than the other one. So there's quite a bit of risk factors built into the previous one, I assume, or what's the difference between the two charts?
Senator, through the chair, I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure. If we need to get, I can get you that answer. I have somebody available online to answer the more technical questions about how this is all put together if we need to do that, or I can talk to you individually more in detail about these things or get that conversation. But
because here the you know, the Y scale goes from negative 120 to a positive 140, and the other one's negative 40 to 100. So there's a huge difference.
Okay, Senator Terry.
Thank you. Mark, I forget, when was it that Anadarko first came into the state operationally?
Early 90s.
Okay, so.
Well, yeah, the first well I think we drilled with Exxon was in 90, I want to say 93. I could be wrong, but it's within a year of that.
Okay, so I'm just, you know, with the debate that's going on about Alaska's competitive place in the world market, and you came in back before we you know, expanded the winter season, and we've done some things to help with regulatory process. The price is up on the commodity. You know, we keep being told that, well, watch it, you're barely attractive on a worldwide basis, but you came back before the state took action on many of those items to make the state more attractive. You're also players in Gulf of Mexico, you're players in Africa where you've got civil unrest, things of that nature. But yet Alaska is a state where you continue to pick up acreage, and you make a comment about, you know, it's a very favorable political climate or environment. So I wonder how you can jive your company's view of Alaska with what we hear from some other companies.
I can only say that what we feel about it, as I said, we think there's a lot of resource potential out there. And again, if you look, we have drilled, particularly in partnership with ConocoPhillips, we've drilled a couple wells on our own, and we hope to drill some more based on the current incentive program, I think has incented some activity. And we're hoping to drill next winter now that we've got our partnership wrapped up. So I think and that incentive program has made a difference for that. But we have a lot of prospects that are not economic, you know, and I think we're doing all we can, and the state's been helping, but in some respects I think this improvement in the economics, something's got to be done to help those economics. And I think I've shared with some folks on a confidential basis, which I can do, some of the field sizes and kind of general ranges that we have, so that you can get an idea. But there just aren't. There's a lot of prospects, but they, you know, a 150 million barrel field, if it's, you know, 100 miles from an existing facility, is just probably not economic. You can have a 500 million barrel field, and if it's, you know, 100 miles from an existing facility or the pipeline, it might not be economic. So there's a lot of resource out there. It tends to be how far you are from existing infrastructure. You get down into the foothills where we're working, and there's no infrastructure, it's far from things, it's challenged drilling environment. So all of that stuff is a factor. There's a lot of resource. I would just say in general, you know, a couple of things. First, there are new players coming. I think part of the price environment shifting is helping that. People have asked about, well, look, the price is really high, why aren't you drilling for all you're worth? And I joke and I say, if you can tell me what the price of oil is from 2012 to 2032, that's what we have to base our numbers on. So in Alaska, because of the long development times, people tend to be pretty conservative on their price estimates because, you don't, it takes a long time to, you know, get out there and drill and actually get something under production. We have a positive view of Alaska. We think there's resources. There's a lot of it fairly close on the edge. We think of being economic, and you'll see, I mean, you've got the pioneers of the world. I mean, they're out there drilling, and they've got a prospect that they find, and I think, of course, I haven't seen their individual presentations, but, you know, they came in and made a presentation that without some royalty relief, they would not be able to develop that field, and were granted it because, I assume, because it was worth getting that royalty. Even with the royalty relief, you're going to get some production out of it, and that's a value. I'm just, there's a lot of things on that cusp, I guess you'd say, where a difference for a few years of that royalty relief or some of these economic models is going to move that minimum economic field size down and bring more prospects into play.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I certainly understand that, you know, the different companies have different decision-making hurdles with regard to what the rate of return is, and you're not an Exxon. We hope someday you are an Exxon based on what you find, explore, develop here in the state of Alaska. But I understand your worldview of Alaska's competitiveness within that world arena is different from the other companies.
Sure.
But the other thing I just wanted to touch on is the modeling. I agree that at this point it seems like we've got a variety of opinions, status quo versus the proposal in the bill. Is the crossover 25, 27? After testimony the other day, one of the company representatives told me that they thought their individual company view was 33. I think we do need to get a little closer on that range. We might not all come to an exact dollar amount, but the range seems like it should be a little bit narrower so that it would appear that our understanding of the way things work is a little closer.
Yes.
Mr. $10 spread right now, or maybe a little more than $10.
And Mr. Chairman, I would just say one of the things I should have mentioned, we have a wellhead value across the bottom here. I noticed that Dr. Van Meers uses a West Texas Intermediate, and one thing I would suggest is use wellhead across the bottom. It is what you use to determine, you multiply the wellhead times your production to get your income numbers. Then you don't have to do the conversions, because some people would use a NYMEX price or a West Coast price. If you just use wellhead, we should be all, because if you're looking at this today, I don't know, on a West Coast price basis, you got to add, what, $8 to these numbers to come up with that. That's just one simple suggestion, is that we all use that baseline. And then, Senator Terrio, through the chair, again, back to my point of what your goal is, some of the companies, some of the larger companies, as you're aware, are not exploring anymore in Alaska. And part of that, I think, and let them speak for themselves, but every company has its niches. And, you know, you can take five geologists and work on a 50 million barrel field, or you can take five geologists and work on a 5 billion barrel field. I mean, just because the field's bigger doesn't necessarily mean you've got a lot more workload. And as you get bigger, you know, the stock analysts look at your reserve replacement. It just, there's a basic philosophy in every company about the minimum size field they're going to look at, you know, everything else being equal. And some of the larger fields, I think, probably larger companies would say, if we don't have a billion barrels of recoverable oil in a prospect, if we don't think it's in that magnitude, then we're not going to focus on it. And that, again, I don't want to speak for the companies, but we're all in that range. So you have companies coming in that are actually quite large but are focused in this 50 to 600 million barrel field, and some of the companies, just that's just not in their portfolio anymore. And frankly, Alaska, so that is a reason on the exploration side. But I would agree with a number of things the other companies have said. If you want, you know, the heavy oil stuff and things underlies some of the existing players, the large players, it takes large investment. That's where they're going to be interested, is in the technology. You see some of the long-reach drilling that these guys are doing out there. You know, Liberty at BP and talking about those kinds of things. Shell's coming back, but, you know, Shell, if you look at them, they're not focused on shore in these smaller areas. They tend to be focused in some pretty significant, you know, Chukchi Sea. Talk about challenged. I mean, how many hundreds of miles away from anything is that? But there's some pretty significant resource out there. So, again, the size of the company sometimes drives what they're looking for, and I think you need a mix of companies up here as well. to do that. And again, what do you want? And different companies may be the ones you, if you want expiration up here, you're going to get a certain size of company probably for the most part. And you see that already largely happening. ConocoPhillips is still active, but beyond that, the other guys aren't. If you're, you know, you see some people focusing on satellites. We tend not to, as I said. We want to find the larger anchor fields. Kerr-McGee, Pioneer, at least their initial stuff was on more what you consider a satellite opportunity. That's important. So we all have our niches, and understanding the impacts that this bill will have on each of those types of companies, and then deciding what you think is the best way to develop the resources, where you think the most value is to the state, is that, you know, that's what's going to determine, should help you determine what you want to do in this bill and what you want to incent.
Senator Terrio?
We hear from some of our consultants the drive of the companies to replace reserves, and I was wondering if you'd just make a comment on that. One individual says that the drive is, you know, the companies are almost psychotic about that, because if you don't continually replace your reserves, you just look like a company that's going to go out of business in the future. And, you know, if you can't find the reserves through exploration, then you purchase them by gobbling up companies, and a lot of that's been going on. So I was wondering if you can just talk a little bit about your company's view of the need to find and book those reserves.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Terrio, yes, we have the need to book those reserves. And I would say, you know, different companies are different. Some people are more acquiring other assets to do it. Other people, we tend to be more of a drill bit type company, but we all utilize different scenarios. Yes, it is an important factor. So,
and Mr. Chairman, one last question: could you speak the bill that's before us? Your level of concern with terms that are not defined, mm-hmm. and would potentially need a fairly lengthy regulatory process to come up with the regulations.
Senator, through the chair, yes, I think we haven't, I didn't bring that up in the conversation here. I do think we need to spend a lot of time on the details. We understand what we think is the intent. We keep looking at the bill, and it doesn't seem clear to us that that's how it operates all the time. And some of that's our misunderstanding, but to the extent it's not clear to us, I think you need to make it clear. I mean, this is a new system, and we would encourage you to make more of the things to the extent you can. Let's have the put them in the statute. If we've got a question, write it out as clear as you can, because you're going to eliminate risk and litigation in the future to that extent. And we do have some questions within the bill. We've gradually been getting answers to them, and this is another one where we've tried to get a number of companies on a couple conference calls to talk to folks in the administration, rather than one company call in and say, what do you think? Because as we get a group, it's better for us, because different guys look at it a little differently. And we thought we understood something, and a company the other day called and said, well, did you think about this? And we went, oh, that's a good point. So we're all trying to understand the bill. Like I said, it's a week old. And yes, I think it's going to take some work to clarify that. And we're, in our company, starting to develop a list of questions to the extent we can get them answered ahead of time. But I think we're writing down a list of questions, and we may try and coordinate that with other companies.
Do you anticipate submitting them directly to the administration, or submitting them to the legislature?
To everybody. I mean, you guys have the bill now. Frankly, we need to get the questions to you, although we have been talking largely to the administration in the past, because it's their bill and they know how it works, and to the extent have been able to explain it. So we will do both. We'll make sure that anything we ask, some of them have been fairly simple and we've gotten answers to, but to the extent we still have questions, we'll come up with them and we'll provide them to you.
Just one comment in relation to the bills a week old. It depends on what time scale you're doing, because to us it's really been an arduous process we've been going through, and to us it's more than a week old. I understand your timing on it, but we spent a lot of time on this thing so far, and I think we're going to spend some more time on it. Senator Elton?
Just a follow-up. I mean, I, I appreciate the offer in response to Senator Terrio's question. It would also be good to know the questions you've asked and that have been answered also, that you've asked the administration that have been answered by
okay.
the administration, so that we know what they are also.
Sure. I'd be happy to do that.
Senator Stevens.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is more of a statement, Mr. Hanlon, than it is a question, but you know, for the amount of money that's been spent by business analysts internally with each corporation, and the amount of money that the state has spent on outside advisors, the amount of money the legislature has spent, you know, we could fund a cheap Hollywood thriller called Dueling Economists. You know, I'm sure there's guys down in Hollywood who'd love to have the amount of money we spent on all these what-if scenarios. And that's exactly what it is. These are what-if scenarios that are based on a commodity price that none of us have any impact on. And so the scenarios, while useful in understanding how they affect the state treasury and how equally as important they affect industry and the state of Alaska's economy, they're all what-if scenarios. I think I appreciate your statement that you made in the beginning that we have to get back to what is the objective of the bill. And the objective of the bill is to maintain a healthy oil economy for the next 17 to 25 years, if we look back to see how long ago it was we had the last revision of the oil tax regime. And I think every time we get derailed on these what-if scenarios and these dueling economists and the fact that no economist can agree on what assumptions we're going to put into the equation, we'll just waste millions more dollars and come back with the same situation we're in now, is we as policymakers need to make the policy on what is the objective we want to achieve. And personally, I think the objective is to achieve a long-term, sustainable, healthy oil industry for the next 25 years. And how is it? And I appreciate the fact that you represented from a small operator that is a taxpayer and an explorer. And I believe we're at the end of the stakeholder presentation now, aren't we, Mr. Chairman?
This is it.
And so, you know, to wrap up the fact that we've heard from all stakeholders, each one of them has told us how this bill affects their operations differently. I also appreciate the fact that you made the mention that this bill is a comprehensive look at trying to address each industry's needs to sustain that healthy industry into the future. And that while it may not be perfect, it reaches the objective that we want in the state of Alaska, which is, again, a long-term sustainable flow of oil off the North Slope and other regions of the state that we think have potential. So, Mr. Chairman, I think that, you know, even though it's been a week, I agree with you. I've read somewhere this morning that we've had 40 hours of hearings on this piece of legislation already, which is a solid week of testimony. And I anticipate we'll have quite a bit more time on the bill. But I want to say thank you to the time you put in the last week for us, as well as to all the stakeholders, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stevens, maybe we should start a poll here. Do a matrix, sell boxes.
Make more money than with oil right now.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any other questions? Mr. Hanley, thank you very much for your presentation. And this is the last of the stakeholders' presentations we have. And with that, we'll end this meeting, and we'll be back at 3:30.